Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lovecraft Country, Season 1, Episode 3, Holy Ghost is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps talking about Lovecraft Country. I'm Josh Wigler, and Holy Ghost, which is a thing that I want to say more often, Holy Ghost! I'm here with Kevin Mahadeo and LaTanya Starks. Kevin, LaTanya, how you doing? Some haunted house shenanigans to get into here on the Lovecraft Country podcast this week.
Holy Ghost-filled house, Batman! Is that where you're going with right there? No, that's
yes.
That's a different podcast, maybe.
What does Robin say in Batman? Is it Batman and Robin or Batman
it is
Forever?
Batman Forever, and he says the words "Holy rusted metal, Batman."
Yeah, holy rusted metal, Batman. And then Batman looks at Robin like he has a thousand heads.
I love that. It's my favorite part of that
and
movie.
Robin says, "The metal.
It's holy.
It's rusted, and it's got holes in it."
It was beautiful. That's my favorite part of that.
Well, Tanya, you still want to be part of this podcast? Like, you're cool with all that?
This is great. This, you know, I feel like I'm getting a free show, a reenactment of a movie. You know,
You would be Robin to my Batman, Josh.
Me?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, rubber lips are immune to your poisons, Kevin.
It's true.
So don't even try it on me. Okay, week 3, Lovecraft Country. Let's talk about that instead of all of the horrors in the world, including Batman and Robin.
Which including, is more, but not limited to Batman and Robin.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is more horrifying, the events of this episode or just Mr. Freeze throughout Batman and Robin, cracking pun after pun? I don't know.
That's hard to say.
Yeah.
Hard to say. Pretty difficult to say, but we're talking Lovecraft. A big episode this week of both, I think, like flexing the muscles of what the show can be, but also forwarding the mythology to a degree, just being like a rock star Journey Smollett showcase. And yeah, I think a lot to sink our teeth into. Some housekeeping notes before we get through, of course, subscribe to the podcast. If you have not done so already, we've got a podcast feed for you to subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. We also have a feedback email if you want to be sending feedback into the Lovecraft Country podcast, lovecraft@postshowrecaps.com. I also want to say up front that this will be the first of two times that you will hear the three of us, Kevin, LaTanya, and I, together on a podcast. This week, we were already scheduled to be talking Black Panther for the Everything is Super podcast that Kevin and I co-host. LaTanya was going to be a part of that already. And then, of course, Friday night, we got the awful news about Chadwick Boseman. And we are going to be getting together this week to honor the man and talk about his work and his legacy, in addition to all things Black Panther. And we want to definitely get as much feedback from anybody as humanly possible for that podcast. Super@postshowrecaps.com. That's super@postshowrecaps.com. If you have any remembrances for Chadwick Boseman, any of the ways in which his work, just his everything has impacted you, had impacted you, that you care to share, we would love to get all of that. So super@postshowrecaps.com. A heavy week and hard to transition from that into talking about spooky haunted mansion stuff on Lovecraft. But I feel personally very grateful to be on this side of a microphone with the two of you, with Kevin and LaTanya, who are just two people who I love talking to so much about so many of these things. And I wish we had, you know, happier things to talk about on a regular basis. But 2020, as LaTanya's screen name in our video conference right now alludes to, which is paid for by the committee to end 2020. Yeah, this year does not want us to get out of the house alive, I think, LaTanya.
It's the first time that I've been creative with any type of Zoom naming convention. So I'm kind of proud of myself. I'm glad that it's in the episode for posterity.
Yes.
Everything is the worst. You know, Chadwick.
Should we rename the podcast? We could do that.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
We'll recover. I mean, I connected it to this show as well. Right before getting the news, liked a tweet that had a bunch of these MLB players deciding to not leave the field and just leave a Black Lives Matter shirt as a symbolic protest. And they paused for 42 seconds, which is obviously, you know, the number for Jackie Robinson, who was featured prominently in the first episode and has been referenced in the next two. And of course, Chadwick Boseman, in addition to being our king in Black Panther, played Jackie Robinson as well. So yeah, a lot of emotions. I am still a little bit incoherent about all of them, if I'm being honest, because typically my first response to any bad news is to withdraw a little bit and, you know, gather my thoughts and like recharge. So I'm looking forward to having the opportunity to do that on this podcast with you too soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Josh and I, we recorded a little intro. We talked a little bit about our initial feelings on everything in the last episode of Everything Super. But I'm definitely excited is not the right word, but I am looking forward to talking about everything for Black Panther. I've been looking forward for that one for a very long time. And it's going to be a different conversation, but it's going to be, I think, an important one regardless. It was always going to be planned to be. So I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, for this one, it's a completely different situation as we're talking about 1963 and other other horrifying and depressing situations as, Letty moves into a predominantly white neighborhood and gets the wonderful welcoming committee by ghostly pale people that happens.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is an episode of Lovecraft to make the pivot, and I cannot stress enough. I think it'll be cathartic for a lot of people to get to have a space to talk about Black Panther and Chadwick Boseman specifically. But you know, we've got a lot of heavy stuff to talk about this week on Lovecraft as well. And I think an episode that went through a lot, you know, if this is a series that is taking different genres on, like different subgenres on every week, this was the Haunted House episode in a very big way, it feels like. And, you know, it's like a haunting on a few levels. It's not just the haunted house, it's the haunted neighborhood. You know, it's the haunting of Letty by her horrible racist neighbors and that horrible racist community. And just, I think, a really masterclass performance from Journey Smollett this week. Great interview with her up at THR with Richard Newby, who's covering the show for us. If you haven't checked that out, worth doing for sure. But just overall reactions and thoughts before we even get into the specifics to this episode, I'd love to get them from both of you. LaTanya, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah. So anyone listening to me on this podcast might think that I believe every episode is a Letty episode. but this is the actual first Letty centered story of the season. And Journey Smollett she destroyed, literally and figuratively, her performance, especially, in two moments that I know we'll talk about later in the episode, was just visceral. You could feel it. And I also have been kind of thinking about the format of this show as we look at it from week to week. We talked about kind of the quick pivots that happen between episodes. And in some of the reading that I've done, I've seen comparisons to American Horror Story, which makes sense because it is an anthology. Each season is a different thing. And Murder House was the first season, and arguably the best, or at least one of the best, because Coven exists.
Coven also exists, I was going to say.
Coven
doesn't have Rubber Man.
That's true. That's very true. But still Coven. So, I get the comparison to American Horror Story, but I think that the one that makes the most sense to me of how to think about this show moving forward and approaching it as viewers is that the secret to decoding this show might lie in the combination of the anthology element of American Horror Story combined with the general aesthetic and presentational style of something felt like a film, Tales from the Hood, a 1995 horror movie that was directed by Spike Lee. Kevin's very happy that I'm talking about this right now. I mean, that was just, vignettes that were based on different horrible situations that Black people have to face in the neighborhoods that they live in. And that's where the horror was mined. And I think that if you kind of like adjust, I guess, your typical viewing habits of a week-to-week show and reframe it in that way, then we probably would like be able to get a lot more understanding about each of the episodes, because there are such sharp tonal shifts between the end of one episode and the beginning of a next.
Yeah, I love that you brought up Tales from the Hood. That's such a great movie, and I love the reference point to it because it is very fitting. And I think American Horror Story is an interesting one because of the anthology style of it, and how wildly that show fluctuates in tone. And you know, I mean, you know, Ryan Murphy. That's par for the course, of course. But it's weird. I will say, my touch point of where the show started to be comparisoned by the end of this particular episode is something way more, Philistinian, in that I went to Supernatural, which I am a huge fan of the first 5 seasons of that show. I think I absolutely love it. And there's a lot that reflects in this to me, especially in the first season of Supernatural, where the episodes are self-contained in its own way, its own storytelling format, but there is a through line that goes throughout each, and we see the pieces build on that. So there's always an underlying plot, and Supernatural did that extremely well throughout its first 5 seasons, I think, because they had a game plan at that point. But I will say, and there is so much that I think is still great about the show. The acting that we pointed out, Journey Smollett in this episode especially, I think the opening of this episode is so good because it captured the quintessential haunted house, haunting ghost story, style with the, in the church, the VO, and then jumping into the text overlay. That's absolutely the correct genre. And they've done a good job hitting the various genre notes, that fit into the style of horror that they're doing. So there's a lot of great stuff. I'm very intrigued by the ending, and I'm still all in on a lot of the race stuff that they do, but maybe it's because my like tragedy happened and my rose-colored glasses like slipped down my nose because I was just upset about everything. But I will admit, I feel like I'm starting to see the sort of cracks in it that doesn't break the show for me, but definitely maybe breaks away from how I feel from the two of you, where there are things where I'm just like, really wish they would fix this, and this, you know, like little pieces I think are still noticeable. I like this episode way better than the second, but some of my problems with the second one I think did transfer over to this one.
I thought this was definitely a much more cohesive episode than episode two, where like episode two really felt like a season of TV in one episode. This felt like This felt more to me like a haunting movie in an episode rather than like a season of TV in an episode. And I thought that was a much more digestible amount of story for an hour of television. I really, really liked this one. I'd be curious to get your take on some more of the cracks. I'll just on the Supernatural tip. Were either of you Fringe fans? Did you ever watch the show Fringe?
I watched it because of you, Josh.
I have not seen Supernatural at all, but I've watched all but the last season of Fringe.
They, after season one, especially like from season two through like season four, I would say the fifth season is its own beast, the final season, but they described, their like storytelling structure as the myth alone. So it's like somewhere between the show that has like its deeply serialized format, like Lost, and the show that has that subsists mostly of standalone episodes like The X-Files, and trying to find like a sweet spot in the middle. And when Fringe was able to like find that gray area, it was at its very, very best, where every episode was like dealing with its own thing, but just ever so slightly pushing the thing, like the greater thing forward, to a point where, you know, all of that stuff eventually comes and collides. And I don't know if that's something that Supernatural did or does, Kevin, but when you were describing that, that sounded a lot like the Fringe mythalone structure, that feels very similar to what Lovecraft seems to be doing so far.
Yeah, it is. It is that. I mean, like Fringe, absolutely. I mean, season three, I think, is the epitome of that, like done so expertly well. It just hit all my nerd buttons. But
great show.
Supernatural did a similar thing where it had like the stories would be pushed forward, and eventually they got to a point where almost every episode was story heavy, but still had an element of standaloneness in terms of like monster of the week, which this is sort of like a horror of the week situation. But yes, right. I think that's what they're going for here, right? Like certainly the myth alone, as it's called, is where we're headed, where we're getting these done in one style horror vignettes, episodic vignettes, I guess, while addressing a larger
story.
We're
definitely not done with like the Braithwaite stuff. Right. Like that's still very, very in play.
Yeah. And like that stuff is really cool. And I think that's something actually the top line, almost like the big crack that I feel, is that I think that stuff is super interesting. But specifically, I think the way that they do that scene at the end, you know, not to jump too far ahead here, but that scene at the end with the confrontation between Tick and Braithwaite, and the scene, I think, in the police car with Letty, or the back of the police van, are so well done and so well executed. And there's a level of like tension and horror and just like scariness that I think is conveyed really, really well in those moments. In the humans are monsters and white people are monster moments are really well done. And I do feel like I think where there's a bit of a stumble for me from last episode and a little bit in this one is that the monster elements aren't that scary. And I absolutely believe it's on purpose. I think the best execution is showcasing the fact that as horrifying as the monsters can be, people are the worst. Like that's way more scary. But I do think you could have had both. And I think that is something Supernatural did exceed at, is that when Supernatural did their horror stuff, they did it really, really well. And the horror stuff was scary. And I think if they're able to pull that off, still make the horror stuff very, very frightening, but elevate the other stuff to be even more scary, I think that message comes across a little cleaner. But that's sort of where I think my stumbling block happened in this episode, is that I just didn't feel as like, I didn't feel the horror elements of the actual
monster. You're just trying to tell us how brave you are.
No!
I'm just a scaredy cat because I was freaked out when the guy got his head knocked clean off.
Right, and that actually was a cool scene, as was, you know, the atypical jump scare that happens in these movies. I mean, that was like Chekhov's elevator shaft, obviously, but very much is of the genre. I think where the real issue happened is that, and this is beyond the show, I think personally, the CG is an issue. And I think as creators, when you're actually filming the show and doing this stuff, you don't see the CG. The CG is like one of the last things that they put in, just going meta and looking at behind the scenes.
Typically, it's something that's changing a little bit. Mandalorian, that's not the case.
Right.
Mandalorian, they're seeing stuff in camera.
Yeah, but then,
but that is standard practices. Yeah, that's being added later.
Right. And so, like, you know, when you're filming this stuff and what you envision it could be is high, but then when the CG doesn't live up to it, like, I think the face coming out of the photos before it happened, I was like, oh, this is a cool idea. But then when it comes out, I'm just kind of like, oh, the CG is not that great. When they do the quick shot of the basketball baby face, for the quick shot, I was just like, ooh, no, thank you. Like, thanks, I hate it. But then when they focused on it, like, you see the CG-ness. And I think part of horror, too, is not seeing the monster all the time. I mean, that was one of the you know, amazing things in the first Alien movies, that you really don't focus on that creature until the very end of the movie. And that's obviously also because of practical effects. And they were like, ooh, this thing looks doofy. We can't show the full thing. But I think that is sort of almost like production meets intent. And I think it's like, for me, it was a bit of an issue, because I think the CG really didn't live up to the to the ability of tension that clearly the people making the show can do, because we see it in the non-special effects part. So yeah, in terms of the horror of it, I like the intent, but I feel like the reliance, and that's obviously a Hollywood thing, on some CG elements is actually hindering this a little bit, in my opinion.
Well, Tanya, does that resonate with you? Are you having similar issues with the CG at all?
Yeah, I mean, the CG rendering polygons, those are words, right? could have been better. Yes, but like that's the least of the issues that I have. So I want to talk about this in the context, I guess, of why there are so few haunted house stories about Black people.
Yeah.
And then to use that to inform some of the things about this episode that I'm critical of. Now, let me say this. I am a weirdo and contain multitudes. So, like, even though I'm going to say the things I'm going to say about this episode, I think this is my favorite one of the season so far, just because I love haunted house stories. And it was a Letty episode. But there are some things that I would like to discuss in a little bit that are different. I have different issues than Kevin has. So, regarding the absence of Black people, I was sorting, you know, through lists of haunted house movies and TV shows in preparation for the segment we'll do inevitably later. And I was just like, okay, well, there's just so few haunted house films about Black people. So I looked into it, and there was a really good piece from blackhorrormovies.com entitled White Fright, or Why There Are No Black People in Haunted House Movies. So it was like a pretty spot on Google search. And the author there wrote that haunted houses implied essentially the dream of home ownership and having that be achievable for everyone, which obviously is not the case. Additionally, the perception of who the audience should root for is shaped by a society who considers some victims to be more sympathetic than others. So like, you know, a white woman and her children in peril in a house are going to be, it's going to be a lot scarier for most people than, you know, Black people who are afraid in their home. And then in an article from RogerEbert.com called Haunted on All Sides, on the history behind this week's Lovecraft Country, Robert Daniels wrote, rarely do these films feature African-American homeowners. When Black people are homeowners, it's usually done as proof of their, as a spoof of their white counterparts, like the Marlon Wayans Haunted House movie that was a spoof of Paranormal Activity. Halloween Resurrection with Sean Patrick Thomas had to stay in a possessed house for a game show. And now Lovecraft Country is seeking to change that by combining Chicago's history of violent redlining with a haunted house construct to examine the ghastly manifestation of racism. So like, this is one of those situations where there aren't a lot of models for what Black creators, actors have in terms of like doing these stories because they haven't existed. So I give this show a lot of, I'm optimistic about like it answering some of the questions that I have, because I think it's trying to address the overall issue of just a lack of representation and ways to like frame Black haunted house stories or Black horror, and that it's going to find its footing later on in the season. And I like have faith in that, but that doesn't mean that I, you know, in the spirit of like, art should be criticized, I don't have some issues with this episode.
Yeah, and that's, I am glad you brought that up. And that has always been, I think, an issue with a lot of horror, right? Is that they don't feature and censor on Black people or other people of color. And it is problematic. And I love that. I love that idea too, in that line, because it's so true about like who's sympathetic to the audience. And obviously, I mean, that exact point, though, that you pulled out is called out in this episode, right? You can't just go around killing white women is straight up a line,
yeah,
an amazing totally, line yeah. From this episode, but that's sort of what it's about. You don't get that. And like, I am, you know, this doesn't break the show for me because the racial stuff that they do, I think is so powerful and so important to see and to experience and to watch that the other parts of it, you know, that I have problems with, are fine to be overlooked. That said, I think I agree with you. What I like about this show and what I wanted the show to really delve into is what is a cult movie for, you know, a black person of color? What is a cult movie or a vampire movie? What is a haunted house story? And I think they did that here, right? They pulled so much of the furniture that lies in haunted houses, so to speak, to make this episode. And it is interesting because it works so well. Like, so much haunted houses are about, like, you know, like violent death that occurred in there. And I think for, you know, for black families especially, that's just like, I wrote down, like, what happens when, you know, a black person digs up the past, they find tragedy. I mean, that's almost inherent in being black in this country, unfortunately. So there's something definitely, I think, deep rooted there about that idea and, like, you know, long lasting trauma and death and how it lingers in a place. And I think they touched on a lot of that. And those are the parts I liked. It's just, I think for me, the nitty grittiness of it is getting a little bit, not the little bit, but you know what I mean? It sticks out in those parts.
So one thing that I'll say on the CG front, like that, like the production stuff, is I wonder what is the impact of COVID-19 on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because things are moving slower, people are working remotely. I don't know what the situation looks like behind the scenes on like putting Lovecraft Country episodes together. I know for sure that some effects have been put together relatively close to showtime. In some cases, don't ask me how I know that. That's my secret trade secret.
Secret trade secret.
Mm-hmm, STS. And so I, you know, the company line, whether or not you believe it for The Walking Dead, is that The Walking Dead didn't have its season 10 finale airing, back in April because it was very effects heavy and they weren't ready to put it together. So they pulled it and relocated it to later in the year to air as a special event. I think that like there's a little bit of like something of convenience factor to that, probably, of like, let's take a beat and like reexamine some stuff, or like maybe the other Walking Dead show that we want to pair it with isn't ready yet, so let's, you know, take some more time there. But I also do believe that effects are probably like this type of work is probably I have to imagine it's absolutely harder to pull off right now with deadlines than it would have been under normal circumstances. And so I think we are, you know, this is the stuff I can weigh in on, I guess, and like, you know, something of some expertise, this being my business, is I think we are going to be embarking on a place with television where for the next several months, to hopefully not, but likely longer, we are going to have to eat, like, the uncanny valley is upon us. And like, where we, how much of it we decide to like tolerate and live in, you know, in the same way that in the practical real world, we aren't making necessary adjustments in order to remain safe. You can make those accommodations. And so for me, I'm not saying that like I can just shut off CGI that is like kind of like, or like production things that are like notably a little bit off. It's hard for me. I can say that I'm trying, because I think that is going to be something that we are not just encountering with Lovecraft Country. I expect that is going to be something we are encountering with television across the board.
Yeah. I mean, for me, this is the reason that the CGI stuff doesn't bother me is, that's not my concern, dude, you know, is because these people are like working their butts off and producing this quality content for us to enjoy during a pandemic. So we've got to cut them a little slack there, I think. I'm happy that, you know, the programming is out there and they were able to go ahead with the like release date as they had planned. The CGI stuff I understand, but it's just not, the crux of the issue for me.
I was about to say that, like, the second that they trot out a Zoom episode of Lovecraft Country is where I'll draw the line and I'll be like, all right, find another person to be on the podcast. I'm out that week. I can't handle it. But then I think about it. I'm like, actually, I wonder what a Lovecraft Zoom episode would look like. I bet it'd be fun to capture like the horror of the modern moment. So I don't know that I would even be mad about that. But I was going to say, at least this isn't a Zoom episode of Lovecraft Country.
It very well could be. I came across a random article that was just like, what? Sorry. It was, the headline was something like, what if you can't leave your home during a pandemic, but it's haunted? So. Yeah. Sure,
it's a great idea for a movie. Yeah.
I could see it.
Zoom haunted,
it's happening
house
to someone. They were just like, here's some stories and some tips on how to cope with your quarantine, buddy.
Let's talk story stuff, because you know this week is driving some things forward. Letty having the house, mm-hmm. the house being haunted, the house coming her way by way of Christina, right? Like I think that is confirmed by the end of the episode. Letty and Tick becoming a thing, kind of weird, sort of happening. Many a murder, lots of death. Montrose not doing so hot. Everyone kind of reeling from George, the fact that we're weeks removed from that. I'll say that's something I don't love. I wish we were dealing with like the immediate ramifications of that a little bit more, because that's such a loss that now it feels kind of far. I don't know if I'm alone on that. Like, that felt like kind of far to me that had happened like long ago when it had happened a week ago. And I wish that we were living in that a little bit more because it was such a loss on the show. But some of that stuff, let's dig into to story and what's going on here. What stood out to you this week, Latanya?
Well, first with the opening scene, I always get excited to see Black Church on the screen. So that was fun. But, you know, Letty in church, while people around her are like jubilantly singing and worshiping and she's just looking devastated and then does the perfect single tear actor thing.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that the music and spoken word portions of that scene, as they have in the past two episodes, helped to set up some of the intentionality for this one. So with that in mind, the spoken word poem that is being played over the window, the song Window by Album Leaf, was taken from Nike's 2017 hashtag Be True ad campaign. And the poem is performed by, Precious Ebony. The words that are excerpted here are, which angels gave you their wings? Which skies have you flown? And when you reached the heavens, who was there to catch you when you fell? This campaign was really important for the LGBTQ plus community, just because it was focused on, Mother Liamoni, who, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, is a trans, ballroom superstar who's known as the Wonder Woman of ballroom. So yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot going on. That combined with that really cool, title card that talks that about like the summer of 1955 and goes from there, that Kevin referenced, I thought was super cool. Happens in so many found footage movies, which are often like haunted house films. So I really liked the beginning of the episode. I loved it.
Structurally, it was cool. And we've been talking offline about Fargo for reasons, Latanya. and one of the things that I love that the Coens started, but Noah Hawley has continued as a tradition, is like the events you're about to see are true.
Yeah.
And sort of just like that like kind of like hype, like even if that's, you know, bullshit, like even if it's hooey, like I think like it sort of like grounds you in a mood. And I think this episode started off in a way that like grounded you with like, okay, haunted house episode. Here we are. Mm-hmm. This is happening.
Yeah. I think what's also interesting in this case too, though, right, is that you know, a lot of these things when they do like these events are true, a lot of times you can usually like dismiss a lot of it as like, you know, Leatherface, we're just like, okay, sure. I mean, something similar happened, but not that. But what's interesting about something like this is that there is truth in it. Like, there is truth in the terrible stuff that happened to Black people in this country and in these areas and like what was done to them. I mean, this story reminded me very much of factual stories that happened. Specifically, I'm calling out New Orleans, but when I visited New Orleans for the first time, I did a quintessential ghost tour, but I picked one that I really ended up loving because it wasn't about ghosts. It wasn't about like this person said they saw this and such. It really was a historical tour. And the person who was giving the tour talked about all the stuff that happened in these various establishments around New Orleans and like what happened to the, you know, people of color that lived there and the horrors that they faced. That was the real crux of the tour. And I really liked that being the tour, not focusing on like the kind of like, ooh, someone saw a ghost, but of like the true atrocities that could cause someone's spirit to remain unrested. And that was really interesting to me. And this reminded me a lot of that because it is stuff that actually happened. So I think there's something really interesting to that fact about the, you know, quote unquote, this is a true story, especially put into the context of this. Is really fascinating. Something I really liked, especially again about that opening. I thought the opening was so good and everything, like from there to her getting the house, to them touring the house, to, you know, to a shot of Murray's beeswax, which I really laughed out loud when I saw that, as a hair product. Cause I was like, oh man, Murray's. So that was like really cool. The James Baldwin reference I thought was fun.
I just think of the cheese shop in New York City.
So yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff that hit in that opening sequence for sure.
Yeah, I think it really got us to a place where like it's not a bottle episode, but like you knew that like well this is gonna be the place where the shit goes down. Like you could just tell within a few minutes that like this was gonna be what the episode was. I do appreciate sort of that. I think like that's been something that like, I said last week. I think like we don't know the rhythm of the show yet. Like we're still like figuring out like how it breathes. Like you heavy breather, like you breathe quiet, like, you know, like do you chew with your mouth open, like kinds of things. Like we're learning like how it moves. We're learning how it acts. And I feel like it's only three episodes in, but like I feel like there was like a real like. I feel like I'm starting to get a sense of the show's humanity by way of its like structure. And I loved how like the title card specifically, and then just like getting into like Letty moving in, like it was like, okay, I think that I like am feeling what the show is putting down right now this week. And I like that. I like that a lot structurally, for the show, and hope to see a lot of that moving forward.
I like that he also like shift that occurs too, right? Like they're in the house. We haven't even really fully gotten deep into the haunted part of it, I think, before the outside the house influences happen. And it's really interesting, you know, that type of stuff, like causing noise and causing problems, is almost quintessential for haunted houses. Like usually you'll see much more haunted stuff happening before you get, you know, anything else. And instead, the first element of fear tactics of causing noise in the house comes not, I, you know, unless I'm mistaking the order of events, it was not from inside the house, but really from outside and the rest of the community, the white community, reacting to them moving away, taking tactics that for anyone living right now feels very familiar. If you heard some fireworks in the middle of the night for continuous times. So that was really, you know, that was really interesting. And I like that they did that they made the first real horror element and, you know, quintessential haunting elements, not necessarily from the house itself.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but yes, obviously, I just want I'm not saying I want character development for the racists, right? I don't. This story is about the characters. It should be about like these black characters. I don't want cartoon racism though. That it's just so like obvious, in hitting all of the like most, I don't know, kind of like most on the nose things that people would do or say. I understand that these things actually have occurred and are occurring in the real world. I just think that, you know, with some development of our cast, we could start to get more frights, not just from, you know, like focusing on the white cartoonish racists and focus more on the lore aspect of it. Maybe find out some more about like what these, Braithwaite people are up to.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, obviously that it's horrible. But I mean, another really cool kind of like almost jump scare moment without seeming too much pandering was when Letty's like asleep in the bed and then the covers get yanked and all you see is like an arm. And then you see that face and it's the bottom is missing. And so that I thought like because she was faded out, obviously. Cause it was a ghost. That was effective, more effective CGI than like other parts of the episode. But just having that happen and then Letty, because of the surroundings that she's in, not even thinking that it could be something like a haunted house. She thinks that it is just the racists that are messing with her. So, and it is, it's just, you know, a dead racist as well.
And there's a lot of those too. Yeah,
at least three.
Yeah, that is interesting, and I definitely understand where you're coming from that, right? The cartoonish racism. I mean, for me, I would love to see a little bit more of the subtle racism that exists. I mean, but at the same point, like I kind of as I talked about it, I think it was in our original podcast where it's just like y'all didn't listen when we were subtle. I think for me, part of the subtlety is sort of the reflection. I don't know if it was intent when it happened, but the reflection of the idea of showing that these are the tactics that these people did and are still tactics that are being done today. Like when we say to people who don't listen, essentially, that like, hey, those fireworks going off and all that, like those are just racist tactics that have existed for some time. They're like, what are you talking about? How are we setting up fireworks at night? Racist. And then you have this and it's just like that. That's how. That's the thing. Like it's almost like just backing up our words, which we shouldn't need to. We should never need to do that. But it feels like such a struggle constantly when you have to like back up the stuff you're saying when you say something's racist and people are just like, no, it's not. And it's just like, just believe me when I tell you it is, you know? But I definitely understand where you're coming from that, like the almost like cartoonishly villainous racist characters that we've seen previously is sort of like what we're getting in this episode, especially and kind of like what we got in the first one, which I think for the first one worked because it was our intro to it. But if it continues, it's sort of just like, okay, well, it's the same stuff again, you know?
I think that was day one, right? Is that the end of night one when everything is going on? Or has Letty been there for a few days at this point?
I think day one is when that happens. The first thing.
Yeah. But I mean, like, we moved to day five and, like, it's just, it's still going on. And that's when a lot of
day five is when the covers thing happens.
Mm-hmm, where those things are starting to come through. And like all of that is starting to come together. And Tick is becoming a little more involved in the house as well. So I guess Tick has been staying with Hippolyta. He's been staying, with George's family. That's not going great. Everything that's going on in that realm is just not, it's not going very well for lots of incredibly understandable reasons. And not the least of which is the fact that like he and his father are still really strained. Did either of you have any big reactions to like where we found Tick after all of this, after their trip to Artem?
Yeah, it seems like Tick went into the mode of just like keeping yourself busy when, you know, something tragic happens and trying to be useful. Right. But for
like anything to not have to think.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And in this episode, everyone pronounced her name as Hippolyta. So maybe we've been pronouncing it wrong. I'd like to generally pronounce.
I'll take the show's word for it over my head.
Yeah. Sure. Generally, yeah. I'd like to pronounce people's names the way they say that they're pronounced. Yeah. So yeah. They call her Hippolyta on there. And it's heartbreaking watching her like stare at that mirror, tearing up the picture, the pages of, you know, Uncle George's favorite book, Dracula, just because she's grieving. And she knows something is wrong. Like she knows that she's been kept in the dark by these people who came back, who like left and then came back with Montrose, but without her husband at least his body anyway, because he had died. And she knows that there's more to the story. And she's just frustrated. She also has been around Tick for a while now. Because he's been with them, as you all said. And she's starting to notice that his behaviors are very similar to those of her dead husband's behaviors. So, you know, I can't wait for more exploration of Hippolyta's character, because I don't know, that actress is just so great at conveying emotion just with her facial expressions. She doesn't even need lines to make you feel absolutely like heartbroken for her and be on her side. And I also think that the show, needs to do some work on developing more of its darker skin characters. So Hippolyta and Ruby and Montrose are probably going to get some more development as this goes forward. So that makes, I'm glad about that. But Tick is just coping. That the scene that he has after he like leaves, because he feels like he's overstayed his welcome. He doesn't really understand what Hippolyta is feeling. And he goes to his dad's house and, his dad is just, devastated. He's just grieving and binge drinking. And he finds his dad passed out and he wakes him up. And then we get the origin story of the I Got You Kid, right?
Yeah. I was like, is time travel going to happen on this show? Like, there was something about that line where I'm like, are we doing time travel? Are we doing time travel at some point? I actually got bizarrely excited about that fact.
I don't think time travel's out of the realm of possibility for Lovecraft Country.
It's not. I mean, it's a trope of the genre, right? It's a trope of horror. I mean, there's certainly horror, but also...
Is there a lot of time travel horror?
There's a few. I mean, Happy Death Day, I guess, is looping horror.
I know that Time Cop was a horrible movie, but do we call it a horror
movie? Well, there's also... This is not just... all horror, right? It's also Pulp Fiction. I mean, before we get to it, but next week's episode looks closer to like a Pulp Adventure Discovery, like Indiana Jones or National Treasure or something. I don't know. That's my like sci-fi genre brain going at it. But when he told that story, I definitely was just like, whoop. Is Tick going to be the one who goes back in time and does this? Like, and it gives a lot more relevance to the beginning. First episode of when they have that Jackie Robinson doing the I Got You Kid in his dream. But sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just jumped up whenever time travel happens. I pop up like a mirror cat.
I hadn't thought of that.
That dude loves time travel.
No, that's really cool. I hadn't thought of that. That would be interesting. I'm down for whatever direction the show is going to go in, Like, I'm pot committed at this point and enjoying it. It's still event TV for me, so.
Yeah. And to borrow a phrase from the great Antonio in the Sky, Antonio Mazzaro, we're going to plant a flag in the time travel theory. Mm-hmm. We'll revisit this, Kevin, if you were right. This moment in time, a little more than 45 minutes into
we'll circle into back around.
Yeah, because wasn't Hippolyta at the party looking, didn't she get lured? And this is later in the episode, but maybe important for this part, but doesn't she get lured to a room kind of that has like a gold solar system? So anything that I don't know what's going on with her, but it's something to do with the stars. And that could definitely increase the probability of.
If we're going to space, like if we are going to Mars, I'm so ready. I'm not, but like I will go. I will go.
Yeah, they reference that too in that first
right
one,
off
you know?
The bat at the very beginning of the whole thing.
I definitely
all right, road trip.
road trip to Mars, baby.
I definitely echo what Latanya's saying as well about that the actress who plays Hippolyta and how good she is. And I love that sequence because it just spoke to grief in such a real and fascinating way. Like you said, Tick is trying to cope by keeping busy, which is a real thing we believe, and trying to do his best to take, of course he blames himself for what happened, that you can't not. And his response to try and fix that is to provide in the same way that George did. And him and George are very similar, but I like that it wasn't even that, like, necessarily him and George were similar, but they weren't similar enough, right? The little things, because they were so similar, the little things stick out so much more, like the cup. I think that's so powerful and so true, where if Tick came in and he was just completely different, I think the grief would have been so different. But when he's there and he's almost the same, but not quite, it's just like, it's almost like having it, but it's not there. And that makes it hurt, I think, a lot more. And I think she conveyed that so well.
Yeah. Anjanue Ellis does a really good job with this role, and I'm sure they're going to expand it as this goes forward. I'm looking forward to the Hippolyta episode in the same way that I'm looking forward to the Ruby episode.
Yeah.
Do we think we're going to get a Ghost George episode because of the Ouija board stuff?
Oh, we got to talk about that Ouija board scene.
About that Ouija board scene, guys.
LaTanya.
No one is watching these kids.
Yeah. Where's your parents? But, I mean, that is so accurate, though. Yeah. Like, for these parties.
It's accurate when during a house party, yes.
Yeah, when I was a kid and my family had house parties and stuff, like, no, what? Like, the kids are doing their thing. No adults are bothering.
Smoke bomb, I'm gone. Yeah.
But that, I went to call it something specific. Like, that Ouija board scene was done really well, but something I saw, thanks to an interaction LaTanya had on Twitter, was about one of the kids, that the first kid that asked a question. And what a hell of a reference. I'll let LaTanya talk about it, since she's the reason I know about it. I don't want to steal that thunder on it, but, like, holy hell.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of thunder.
yeah.
Yeah. So
we used all that up on Ragnarok. I'm sorry about that.
It's all gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah. So these children are alone in the basement playing with a Ouija board, which is never a good idea. Where did this Ouija board come from?
Trash game. Nothing good comes from it.
It's terrible.
Just terror.
One of the children who's sitting at the table seems to ask if he's going to have a good trip coming up. And I think they mention at some point that he's headed down south. And it's Emmett Till. It's, you know, the boy is Emmett Till, which is one of the of like several times in this episode where like actual people who have died are referenced to further the plot, which is one of the things that I would like to talk about in terms of constructive criticism. So yes, like, it is a really interesting way to like populate the lore of your show, right? The world of your show. Like, the people who are staying at this boarding house, for example, are like James Baldwin and Martin Luther King Jr. So like, you know, that's really cool. But then we get to a point where we start to bring in people like Emmett Till, and it's just alluded to, or the people that like are referenced in the chat later, that kind of have brought me to have some of the misgivings about this episode that I have. So I don't know if now is the right time to discuss that or.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
So, all right. So a little bit of preamble first. that reference, actually, I saw in a tweet from Zalika, and I'm going to butcher this, I apologize, Ibrahimi, who is a doctoral candidate of African-American and African diaspora at UT Austin. And, you know, she was tweeting about some of the things that she was noticing during the episode. And it was from her that I got that connection. So I just want to acknowledge that. And also I want to acknowledge a good friend of mine, whose work I've shared in relation to the show before, Nadia Hussein, who is a PhD candidate at the University of Pittsburgh. And her research focuses on affect theory, horror theory, Black studies. So, you know, this has all kind of helped me to feel a lot more confident in talking about some of the issues I have with the show. And I want to preface the little rant or rantettes, because they'll probably be vignettes. By saying that I am very confident that this show is going to like end up taking us to places that we did not imagine and like, you know, stick the landing, for lack of a better term, for a sport that I love, right? I'm very optimistic that moving forward in the season, the things that I say about this episode are going to get addressed and we'll understand more deeply why they occurred. We'll get the context that we need. But I do think it's important, even with a show that I love and creators and actors that I love, in any storytelling, to allow some room for, like, you know, constructive critique that comes from a place of, you know,
a million percent. That, like, that really is triggering for me as a general principle, is like, you can absolutely critique a thing you love. Mm-hmm. Two things can happen simultaneously. It's totally valid.
I refuse.
Let's not lose nuance. Nuance is important.
I mean, two MCs can occupy the same space at the same time, but two ideas can be true.
Yes.
That's for sure. That's very true. So yeah, some of the things that didn't work for me in this episode. I talked about character development a little bit already. But it's just like, I just want some backstory for these characters that isn't expositional. I want to know more about their lived experience because it so determines how they will react in the situations that they're faced with on the show. So I'm giving it more time and optimistic about it because character development is the type of thing that takes time and we're on episode 3. So I don't really need to like wax poetic there. What I will talk about is something that many of you have probably seen floating around Twitter in relation to the many, many issues of 2020. Hashtag paid for by the committee to end 2020. But
I will be donating as soon as this call ends.
Yeah, please do. I'll send you my Venmo.
Yeah.
It's called Misogynoir. The term was coined in 2008 by Dr. Moya Bailey, who's an assistant professor at Northeastern University. And she researches queer Black feminist studies, coined the term in 08, but then first used it in an essay in 2010 on a website with a truly amazing name, crunkfeministcollective.com.
Amazing. Yes.
It's just a great name. And the essay from 2010 is called They Aren't Talking About Me. And essentially, Bailey wrote this because she was conflicted about the songs that she was hearing and enjoying and the lyrics that they had and, you know, their demonstration of misogynistic tendencies toward Black women, whether in the lyrics or in the videos or whatever. So she came up with the concept of misogynoir, which is a Natalie portmanteau of the words misogyny and the French word for Black, noir. And it just refers
just
to...
Just going to let that go, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm thanks. Not. That was great.
you did just an incredible job there.
Thank you. I do what I can.
You did a great thing.
any type of anti-Black, racist misogyny that Black women experience, right? So these types of behaviors include, but are certainly not limited to, discussions about Black women's bodies and their body types or shapes, whether or not features are more masculine or projected, whatever that means. The belief that Black women are naturally more promiscuous, as well as how Black women are talked about and portrayed in the media. So in this case, you know, we get the lead up to that scene with Tick and Letty in the bathroom. And the lead up to it is that Letty is enjoying herself at a party, right? And it starts off fine. Like, who amongst us has not danced with someone to make someone else jealous? I ask you. Maybe that's just me. But like,
I don't think it's me. No, is my guess.
Okay,
I definitely have.
Okay, I was like,
I just don't know that I
well,
I don't possess.
Josh
the
also
ability.
Can't dance, so there's that problem.
That's what I'm saying.
Emily
is really cruel about it too. She's like, you know, when you always just kind of like do like, I'm like, I don't know what I.
There's always
doing.
There's always
I have other skills.
There's always one in the couple. Like Robin doesn't really dance. You don't really dance. Our other friend Ricky doesn't dance, but Sam does. Like there's a lot.
Jay-Z can't dance. Like, have you ever seen Jay-Z try to dance?
No. So, oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin can dance. I've seen him do it. He's great. He loves to dance. I should qualify. He loves to dance.
It's accurate. It's part of it. I have to, or else my culture will take away my card from me.
Oh, okay. Well, great. so, or not. So, yeah. For example, like, you know, Letty's dancing with a man at her party, right? It's her house. She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
And she sees Tick, who comes in there, like, in his uniform, which is unfair for many reasons. You know, the Jonathan Majors of it all, they just make him look like a snack so much in this show that it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I understand. I don't want to objectify anyone, but, like, you know, it's a universal truth that people agree with.
Yes.
So anyways, like, he comes in there, and then this other dude, like, random dude, who is also paying attention to Letty and watching her dance with someone, is just, like, essentially discussing which one of them should claim her. and it's disgusting. like, why? And then it leads to that, like, that sex scene, which is just, like, why? And also, don't. The past 2 weeks, Letty has survived an attempted sexual assault by a supernatural Tick doppelganger, and she has been shot and died and come back to life. And then this happens. So, like, I get that sex scenes on HBO are inherently weighty. There's going to be a lot of them. A lot of them are more nuanced now. Like, you know, the analysis of consent and all its different ways that it could be given or not. And I May Destroy You, Michaela Cole's show that just wrapped up. And I also know that HBO was one of, like, if not the first company to hire intimacy coordinators so that their actors would actually feel comfortable in those scenes. So
a
I'm glad
on that front for sure.
Yeah. So I'm glad that, like, everybody felt safe and protected in this. And I get that Letty and Tick have been through an intense emotional experience with each other, several at this point. And they're just trying to, like, find something. We don't know what Tick is looking for. That's not elucidated in this episode. We later find out that Letty just wants to feel something. But whenever sex ends in tears, something has gone wrong, you know, in my mind. So I get that we later find out that Letty was a virgin and she just wanted to feel something. And it's all very complicated. My hope is just that Letty gets the chance to express and own her sexuality on this show without, you know, all of the judgment that goes along with it. But one thing I will say about this particular part is that they were able to subvert the classic horror trope that, you know, one is that there aren't very many Black final girls. And two, that you can have sex in a horror movie and still live at the end. Going back to, like, the opening title card with, like, the three people disappearing, one of the other reasons that was so cool is because, you know, it focuses, obviously the story focuses on the Black characters, and it says three people disappeared and doesn't tell you who. So the whole episode, you're just trying, like, you're waiting and you're thinking that it might be people, you know, and it's not. So those were some cool subversions.
Especially after losing Courtney B. Vance the week before, like, that's such a declarative statement of, like, no one's safe. Like, we could kill main characters this week again. Totally possible.
Mm-hmm. You know, regards to that scene, and also, I think they go hand in hand, your criticism about character development. I think we do have a lot of time still. It's only episode 3, and you could dole out character development at a slower pace. I do think part, I agree with you on both these notes, and these are definitely the like deeper issues with the show that are more warrant to speak of than just the CG. But I think the problem or an after effect of having the way the show runs is also because it's so breakneck and they're hitting so many things of the genre of haunted houses that I do think we're not getting the character development pieced out in the way we should. And I think that is evident in that scene, especially. I think there's so much that could be developed in a way to have these characters develop more about what these characters are like, or at least reflect on it in interesting ways. But instead they happen and the characters nor the audience really gets time to sit with it. And I think that is mm-hmm. not a great form to further the story. Absolutely. That scene, I agree with you when the claiming, you know, like, oh, who's going to claim her, and leading into the sex after that. I think there's a lot of issues there. One, if you're going to have that, like the fact that that conversation about who's going to claim her is happening, we don't see a reflection or after effect in that idea in a way that like helps even further a character or show like why that's, you know, that type of mentality is bad or the consequences, except maybe the fact that Tick is surprised she's a virgin, which to me, that's not character development. Like if he's not going to sit with it, it happened and he's just like, oh, that's interesting, basically. And even then, still not good character development. I think it's also a weird thing to have it be like the twist is just like, oh, you thought she was a girl who slept around, but she's really a virgin. And like you said, having it end in tears after that, there's just so many things that happened that felt wrong in the way to approach that and then not follow up some sort of like addressing of the inherent problems and biases within the context of it. Like, and then the idea too of like, are they trying to say because we like as the audience and as the characters, oh, they misjudged her that she wasn't that she was a virgin and she hasn't slept around, and then have the scene afterwards though where she is sad about the fact that she lost her virginity in such a way because she wanted to feel something and she's feeling conflicted emotions. I mean, unless their message is just like sex is complicated, I'm like, that's not a real message. Like it's like if you want to have someone, especially empowerment of women, like the idea of virginity too as a like precious thing to be giving away is also inherently misogynistic, and it's something that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion around you know, of how that reflects younger women and that idea. And so to then try to go against it but then have a moment where the regret of doing it I think falters in any sort of message and actually backtracks in that, which I found just very strange for that scene and for that development. Again, my POV, I'm a dude. I don't really get the final says here on how it's approached, but this is just my personal POV on that moment. And especially again, like I have just this thing with how people treat what they teach women about virginity and how they make it in such a way that really does, I think, to an extent, try to strip away or pull back women's sexuality into being confined and being like untouched. Yeah, I definitely agree with you about the problems in those moments as well.
Yeah, as not a dude, I would say maybe the virginity thing is tricky. It's just maybe the time period during which this is happening explains a little bit more about that. I mean, you know, Letty, it seems, was raised in a religious household. I know that I was, for sure. And this is the 50s. We also don't know how old she is. So, you know, like, people remaining virgins.
There's a
virgins,
lot we don't know, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot we don't know. And people remaining virgins until they're married still happens, but definitely happened then. So I pepper in those things, but completely, like, yes, understand that sentiment. You know, there are a couple other things. I think, because last week, remember, Kevin, we were like, oh, this one doesn't have as much stuff about race. You don't have our,
yeah.
So it's one of those, like, be careful what you wish for kind of situations.
Monkey spa, yeah.
It's a monkey power production, yeah. So.
Sure.
So the medical experimentation of it all, Can we unpack that? Because that's a pretty important part to why the house is haunted. It's the reason that it's haunted.
Right. And it's so it belonged to a guy, Hiram Epstein. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, the great Richard Newby, who's just doing such great writing on the show for THR, you know, linked. This is not a character who's from the novel. But Richard writes, it's worth noting that Hiram Epstein is not a character in Matt Ruff's novel Lovecraft Country, but his inclusion in the show and name feels like a reference to financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, who also trafficked in bodies, in this case underage girls. There's this parallel that Green is constructing between the present day reality of America and a fictional story of America's past, one that's founded in truth. I thought that that was a really fascinating connection, again, with the way that this show that's set, you know, 50-ish, 60 years ago is reverberated, you know, how today is like reverberating through that. Just that was fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the way that the Epstein character was used in this episode was interesting. It's an interesting device that got used a lot in terms of like the Black experimentation. This is where the CGI thing for me comes into play, because in a second I'll talk about more of the history behind like exactly these types of stories. But the types of medical experimentation and essentially eugenics that doctors like Epstein performed, because they were so grotesque, it seems like it would be the place where the CGI would need to be better to just, you know, give respect to the people that are being referenced in this case, right? So, you know, it's interesting to use as a plot device, invoking kind of the people who've come before us, who have gone through medical experimentation. I think that the issue I have is not so much with the allusions to, you know, these individuals being kept out of art completely. I just think that there should be more nuance when you're saying particular names and making them plot devices, as opposed to exploring the issues behind this more fully, the Emmett Till of it all. And then the Ankara, Lucy, and Betsy, the people are the ancestors that Letty calls on. So like I said, I'm optimistic that these are going to get taken care of, that these issues are going to get addressed, and we'll get some explanations for it when it all comes together. But, you know, as Faulkner said, the past is never dead. It's not even past. And there was this great NPR discussion from 2017 entitled Remembering Anarcha, Lucy, and Betsy, the Mothers of Modern Gynecology. That included several scholars, including Dr. Vanessa Gamble, and then the poet Bettina Judd, who wrote a collection of poems entitled Patient that tackles the history of medical experimentation on Black women. And she won the Black Lawrence Press Hudson Book Prize for that collection. This piece specifically focuses on J. Marion Sims, who has statues of him in Alabama, South Carolina, and New York. And the one in South Carolina has an inscription that reads, "Treating alike empress and slave." Morris was born in South Carolina in 1813, and in 1845, he started to experiment on enslaved women to perfect a technique to repair vasovaginal fistulas, typically occurring after a very difficult childbirth. There were 10 slaves that were experimented upon in those sets of like experiments. Only 3 of them are named in any of the notes, and that's why those women are thought of as the mothers of modern gynecology. Anarcha, though, was just a 17-year-old slave who had gone through a very brutal labor, and Sims decided to operate on all of these women without consent because they're slaves and considered property, so cannot give consent, and without anesthesia. And it's still widely believed today that Black people don't feel pain in the same ways that other people do. It's one of the reasons why it's so difficult when you go to the doctor to get anyone to believe you. You have to like dress a certain way, almost to like have be taken more seriously. All of that stuff still exists today. And so the thing about Anarka is that he performed 30 surgeries on her to perfect this technique that he would later use on people like empresses. And this piece is great at pointing out how these women, again, only three of them were named, and they're named in this episode, did not have a voice. It was erased. And while I understand the intention behind manifesting the power of calling on our ancestors to, you know, accomplish great things, as Tick was able to tap into in the last episode, I would like to see this taken a step beyond kind of like using these people to kill comically racist house intruders, or, you know, yeah, or just like displaying the horrors that that doctor visited upon those people in the way that they were portrayed. I think that it could have been done a little bit more delicately. And that's just like one example. This doesn't even get to the Tuskegee experiment of it all, or any of the other, the Baltimore experiments, like hundreds of other experiments on Black and brown people that will still continue today. I'm guessing that the first COVID-19 vaccine will be tested mostly on the population that it is affecting, which is Black and brown people. So,
yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from with that too, right? I think there wasn't a lot of development of that usage beyond just calling, like you said, calling on the ancestors to solve a problem, essentially. Like I said earlier, listen to the person who has the, I think, connection to it. Like for me, when I found out the Emmett Till thing, I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was fascinating. And I was like, oh my God, that, you know, to use Emmett Till in such a way and to connect him. But I'm gonna, like I said, I'll defer to your POV on it because it's, I think, stronger in that term. I definitely see where you're coming from. Especially the usage there, and like, what is it beyond just a device in a way, you know, like essentially a plot device, to have these references and to pull these points. And like, for me, I think the other part too is that while it's drawing from like real stuff that happened, it felt like it wasn't saying anything beyond almost like what we've seen in ghost stories before, except, you know, delving and touching into the real parts of it, the this is a true story part, like the idea of like, oh, someone experimenting on people and that's why the house is haunted, versus like, I don't even know, like just making something up on my own of just like the house is haunted because of the terrible things that happened, and, you know, specifically they want people to stay out because of that, like, you know, the pain they suffered is in this house. And rather than have it like, oh, there's the people that died, but all like their experiments on, but also the ghost of the guy who did it, is sort of just like, okay, so it's sort of like, I don't know. I've seen a lot of ghost stories, and like the idea of the end having to be like the people that were in pain joined together to kill the person that caused the pain is sort of like also kind of tropish in that I've seen it. You know what I mean? That it's been done. So it was a weird like thing there as well. Nothing that makes, again, doesn't break the episode. But just like the little pieces, I think that definitely I thought that could have been handled slightly differently, which would have been, I think, possibly better. I don't know. It's hard to say, like, in your mind, right? Like, yeah, of course it would have been better if they did this. And who knows? Like, who knows what could have happened?
I mean, it's like a constant learning process for everyone.
Absolutely.
Me, especially. Because when I first saw that tweet, I was like, oh, layers. And then you started thinking about it more. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this particular layer.
Yeah.
I get the impetus to do it. This is reminiscent of like, you know, American Horror Story and how it seeds in actual like locations and people, but also, of, you know, underground because there were like actual, like Harriet Tubman was a character on the second season of that show. So like
underground, like pulled, it was like historical fiction then.
Yeah, yes. About the Underground Railroad. Yeah.
No, I know, but it would pull characters in that. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I understand like why it's happening. What I don't understand, or at least that I don't know that I would be strong enough to do, is Letty's sense of obligation to these ancestors is incredibly powerful. I think it's what makes that moment at the end where they're all like trying to with everyone joins together with Letty to like cast the spirit of Epstein out of Tick. And that poor woman, voodoo priestess, whose name we don't get. I hope she's okay. I don't know where she came from, but I hope she's fine. Yeah. That was powerful because of Letty's sense of obligation. Like after having done that research, she felt compelled to learn more about the house and the owner and like how she could help the people that were in there. But you're telling me that in spite of the fact that she went like full on beautiful mind with all the pictures that she took and a literal disembodied ghost head emerged from the floor and told her to get the F out of his house with so much force that he physically blew her backwards against a wall. And she was like, okay, so, we're digging in.
Like, well, that's a haunted house problem, right? Like that's also, I mean, I think we alluded to this before. My problem with haunted house movies, you know, haunted house movies aren't like my favorite of the genre because part of my problem is always just like, get out, leave. Like, I know it's you spent money and stuff, but if the options are like, these ghosts will murder you or you need to go, like maybe go. I don't know. Like there is something to the idea of like, you know, like especially at the time and like having a house and earning something that you feel that is yours. And to,
it's hard to give up.
And especially to not have a white dude chase you out. Right. Like have a white person chase you out of your house. There's something there to it. I think it's very subtle.
There's a lot of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, no, I mean, I think there's a lot of there.
In terms of like actual haunted house story tropes, like you leave, you gotta go.
You gotta go.
Well, that's why I think the best ones, you know, they snow you in so you can't get out. You're trapped, or like they suck your, you know, youngest child into the television set, and so you got to figure that out before you go. You know, like if you know the movie like comes up with a reason for you to stick around,
take the TV.
Yeah.
Just take it with you.
Take the TV with you, yeah. Carol Ann is your favorite channel.
You got
now.
Carol Ann? Great.
Yeah. That actually is who, like, Poltergeist absolutely is why I think they did the priestess coming in very much reminded me in Poltergeist of the...
This house!
Reminded me of her. Yeah. You know, again, I think this is part of the thing that happens in the show, at least in the previous episode and this one, and I'm hoping they find the right balance, like you said, learning process. Is that they really go all in with hitting a lot of notes from the genre. And I think that sometimes overloads the genre a little bit, you know, like including, okay, we got to get the priestess to like, you know, clear the house. That's like a thing that happens. The haunted elevator shaft, that's, you know, and even the people breaking in and getting killed, as much as, again, I will, watching racist people just get murdered, sure. I felt like there should be, like,
sure,
in a tighter story, it would have been a little closer connected between those two. Instead, it felt like it was the, like you said, almost like the racist characters of people who were just like, get out of our neighborhood, and then the separate story almost of Harem Epstein happening. And if there was a way to like, I mean, there was loose connections, especially with the police department, but like having it be a little bit tighter, I think could have worked well into having how those three, you know, or even those people fit into the events a little bit cleaner, if that makes sense.
I do just want to say that, like, because we've talked about like nitpicky CGI stuff, that like I was so grossed out, impressively so, by like the head like getting sliced off, like, and then like the squirting viscera, like that was like really well done and gross and terrible. You know, like that, like. I don't know what the balance on practical versus CGI. I assume no true human heads were lopped off in the making of the scene. Certainly hope. But like, you know, what was like
different the horror movie?
Yeah. What was the practical on that? Like, what did they have standing in? Cause it like that looked really real to me. And that was a one where I was like, blah, you know, like that was just a total like savage kill. That I was, I don't know why I'm surprised to see that on an HBO show, but like that was just like, whoa.
Yeah. Quickly moment. Dispatching racists. Done.
Yeah.
Oh no, like, they
just
died.
Like a very like clump. Yeah, done. Finito.
It's like in the first episode where the people chasing them, the car comes out and the car flips and you just see them like boop and like there they are, and you're just kinda like again, like, yeah, the, oh no, they died.
Okay. You know. Moving right along.
So the house is still connected to the Sons of Adam stuff. And we'd been wondering that last week, right? Like, is this going to be a through line or was that just done? And clearly it's not just done. So I'd love to like meditate on that a little bit in terms of where do we think that's going, right? Also, I would also throw it out to both of you. Do you think, cause we're talking a little bit of, you know, not a little bit, we're talking a lot of bit about like, character development stuff and wishing that we knew some of these characters a little bit better at this point. It's the third episode. Did the show just bite off too much last week? Is that a part of this? Like, did we go through so much last week that like maybe we should have slowed down there, especially if we are going to continue the Sons of Adam story, that was a lot to destroy in the Sons of Adam story if we're going to keep it going. That was something that I was thinking about this episode is I too was wondering like a little bit of like a little more of like who were these people before we met them. I don't know. Am I on an island on that one, or is that something that anyone's considered?
I mean, I think we're going to be learning a little bit more, and certainly from the reveal here, learning more about the Sons of Adam and their plans and how it all connects as it goes. Right. I just now from the POV of Christina versus Samuel. That said, I mean, there's ways that you could probably have Samuel incorporated in some way. I think we are going to learn more about them as an organization, whether or not those specific people like, you know, Samuel, you know, specifically, probably not, but I find the organization can be more compelling than just him necessarily. I think they said the stuff they needed to say with that character specifically, and getting now Christina, who is a woman who has been put out of the Sons of Adam because she is not a son, now being essentially in control of this power, and what is she going to do with it, and how is she, you know, what's going to happen at the end, I think can make for some compelling stuff as they delve into that.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Kevin. I'm excited about where they could take Christina Braithwaite, but something happened to me in between watching Lovecraft Country last week and watching it this week, and that is that I watched the film The Dark Tower.
Why?
Which is based on the Stephen King series.
I heard that movie is atrocious, which is a tragedy because Idris Elba is in it.
Which
that movie stars both Idris Elba and is it Matthew McConaughey?
How can you have a bad
movie? I haven't
with that?
Seen it.
And it's so. Maybe the most unwatchable movie I've seen, and it's probably now my new least favorite movie ever, having just read all of the books. The books are unadaptable. I don't know why they tried. It's a terrible movie, and Abby Lee, who plays Christina Braithwaite, shows up in it, and like I feel spite towards her now.
I mean, well,
so this is going to be a problem for me moving forward, I think, unless that helps.
I was about to say, she is definitely a villain. I feel like her threat of you can't go around killing white women, I feel like should be enough to be like, oh.
Oh, I'm not saying like, oh no, I'm going to have trouble empathizing with her. It's just, I think I'm going to have trouble hating her for the right reasons. I'm going to be so focused on the fact that she was part of the Dark Tower. No, I think I'll be able to put that aside.
The right reasons.
Yeah. Add it to the list. Add it to the list.
Put it on a shirt. I have in my notes, WTF Christina. And also, is this woman just collecting well-dressed black men? Like,
What is she doing?
I think she wants to usurp Sons of Adam, which it's on extent could be, you know, a story about, you know, again, like a woman trying to claim what was essentially not allowed to be hers. But I mean, I think this is where the house is going to lead into, right? We're talking about like, how does this stuff going to tie in? What's going to happen next? I mean, from the brief preview we get, you know, we see that they're going to be they're basically going to do like a National Treasure Indiana Jones style thing, it seems like. And you know, I think the tunnel underneath the house is definitely gonna come into play. I think they're gonna go looking for those pages and go into a magic tunnel, which also another horror movie thing. Do not go down the scary dark tunnel. Same thing when they did have that second basement. I'm just like, never go down to a second hidden basement. Like, that's you absolutely
that's
do not
right
go
up there. Right up there with never follow a hippie to a second location is don't go into the secret basement.
Honestly, don't follow anybody to the second location. You never go.
Never works out.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, we get a little bit of exposition dump here from Christina where she discusses how, you know, the Winthrop house, she was the one who was responsible for the fight between Ruby and Letty, essentially, which was heartbreaking. I felt so bad for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Umi Misaku was heartbreaking. She was just a total like badass in this episode. She did singing at the party, and then she pulls up the car so everyone can like hide their guns before the cops get there.
She's
trying to give her sister a chance. And then we find out that this weak and white nonsense that Christina has bought this house to use these people as like a pawn because she wants access to the Winthrop house, so that she can try to find the pages that were removed from the Book of Names that got Horatio Winthrop, who was a founding member of the Sons of Adam, kicked out for trying to develop his own cipher to get the language of Adam. We also learned that, you know, one of the powers of the Braithwaite family is invulnerability. So, you know, there we go again with the, like, our death's permanent
right
kind of thing. So,
yeah, we're going to get like a severed stone head, Tony Goldwyn at some point. It's just like going to be like carried around in like one of those Futurama globes.
I do love the fact that idea though of the invulnerability, because I do think that is super purposeful of like a rich white person is untouchable. Like there's just something so like purposefully done about that I think was like a moment where I was like, all right, I see what you did there. But yes, Futurama head. I just realized you said that. Like, what are you doing, Josh?
That happened.
I said it. What do you want?
He said what he said.
You know, someone.
Listen, I said. I made a Futurama reference the same week, Kevin, that you made a Mortal Kombat Annihilation reference on a podcast. Which one's more obscure?
Mortal Kombat.
You know what?
Sure.
No. I want this argument to happen. I'm going to sit back with my. Where's my tea? I've got some tea here.
I love Futurama. Futurama's great. That's one of my favorite shows. Phenomenal show.
My heart grew a few sizes the moment that you invoked
Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Yeah, it also made me sad, but I was very surprised. It's nice when things happen on a podcast that have never happened before. I have to imagine that there isn't a single podcast in the world that's ever referenced Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Even like dedicated Mortal Kombat podcasts.
They don't talk about it. Like, we never talk about that one.
I think they forget it existed.
We've just been getting down to like the nitty gritty of all pop culture during this podcast. we got some really... I mean, we went Dream Warrior on people immediately.
We've gone Dream Warrior on people. We want to talk haunted horror, haunted house movies.
Yes.
Obviously, I called out The Shining, The Poltergeist. Those are the two I'd bring. I just finished reading The Shining for the first time. Actually, I hadn't read it before. I'm gonna read Doctor Sleep next, so that I can watch the movie afterwards because I have that reverse experience. The Shining is such an iconic movie, and I know that Uncle Steve hates it. And so like I was curious why. I think the movie's better for sure, but the book was worthwhile. And the book was actually especially resonant as like I call myself a sober person. I think I'm supposed to say I'm a recovering alcoholic. I don't know. I'm very bad with this stuff. But that is like so central to like the horror and like the ways in which yielding to that demon can like transform you and turn you into a monster. I found to be like, especially as we live in a time that I got to imagine I'm not the only one who is a sober person who feels their sobriety being tested by the universe every single fucking day.
Yeah.
Pardon my French. So I enjoyed listening to that. I listened to it as an audiobook. Who does the reading on that? Because it was great. Campbell Scott, the actor, who has just like, has a really melodic voice for the book. So read that, watched the, obviously I've seen the movie a ton of times, going to be reading Dr. Sleep, will be watching Dr. Sleep, which I understand returns to The Overlook. But when I think of a haunted house, I immediately go to The Overlook in my mind.
Such a good movie.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, like, yeah, I think Shining, Poltergeist are definitely two to call out. As I mentioned, I'm not...
Poltergeist 2 is a nightmare. Emily and I are like, we regularly like to really get under each other's skin. We'll quote Mr. Kane at each other when he goes, "Because I'm smart," is one of the scariest things. Let me in. He is so scary. The actor, I believe, was sick while he was filming. I think he died shortly after.
Man.
You know, you hear about like a lot of the like the really scary shit that happened around the production.
That's one of the cursed films.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's horrifying, and we definitely quote him at each other when we really want to scare the shit out of each other, which happens more often than you'd think.
Sounds about right for you guys.
Love it.
I mean, those are obviously big too. I mentioned that I'm not as into haunted houses as a genre, and because I get to that point, we're halfway through. I'm just like, just leave, just go. But two that beyond that I think I would like to call out is what did surprise me is how good I thought the Conjuring movies were. I was actually pretty surprised by how well done they were. So as a person who didn't like haunted houses, I thought those were well executed films. So I definitely would say like Conjuring 1 and 2 is really entertaining. And TV show, I know it can be divisive and I understand why. But I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed and loved The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. It's a series versus a movie, but I absolutely loved it. I know that there is a ending part that make a lot of people angry, and I get why. I absolutely understand why people are mad about that one part. But like overall, I mean, the journey up to that one point, I think, is incredible. And whether or not that one line ruins it for you, obviously, is your own take on it. But I definitely recommend that as well, especially as a well done horror movie with some creepy, creepy, creepy elements.
Yeah, The Haunting. I just recently rewatched The Haunting of Hill House, like during Quar. Which is probably
Mike Flanagan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Mike Flanagan is great.
Who Hush directed Dr. Sleep, so I'll be checking.
I didn't know he directed Dr. Sleep.
Hush.
Pretty sure.
I gotta watch that ASAP.
Yeah, Mike Flanagan's movies are great. Mm-hmm. Like even the early ones are good.
It's really
even
good.
Like Oculus.
Oh, that's right.
Is great. But yeah, I love that series so much. I don't know what it is about it, really. Like the storytelling is obviously so like well thought out, and like they cast the perfect child actor to like adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you see how that kid became an adult.
Exactly. Maybe with the exception of Oliver Jackson Cohen's character, who is like a little like
Jonathan kid with a, Lipnicki. Yeah.
kid with glasses who grows up to look like human that head guy.
Handsome. Yeah. He was on, I guess he was, you know, they were like, well, he's addicted to drugs, so he doesn't look good, right? And it's like the Jesse Pinkman effect where they're like, he's on meth. And you're like, yeah, but it's still Aaron Paul who's handsome. You didn't even do anything to his teeth. Like, he's still a handsome
Nothing.
Anyway.
Nothing. Yeah, no, that's I love that show. And I actually don't have a problem with the ending. I might be in the minority on that particular thing, but I love so many of the conventions that the story tells. And it was one of those things where I didn't even, until after seeing the whole series, notice any of the ghosts. I guess they,
yeah. We noticed, you know, a few of them. The first time we did, we were like, for anyone who hasn't watched it, you should do this, is that there are, like, hidden Mickeys in Disney, there are hidden ghosts throughout the series where they're just there in the background. They don't do anything, but, like, they're really subtle at times. And, like, the first time I noticed one, I was just like, what the hell is that? And then we realized, like, oh, they're just ghosts. And so, like, my fiance and I would just, when we were watching, like, constantly be like, where's the ghost? Where's the ghost? Is there a ghost? Which really just heightened the experience. I thought, just, yeah, that show is incredible. And I'm really excited for Bly Manor. Sorry to interrupt again. I interrupted you.
No, I interrupted you because you were still giving your list.
I think those are my main ones, actually. So I'm going to hand it over. Those are the ones I'd probably pick out.
I got very excited about this.
Oh,
and
I get
like
it.
Even revised the list. I love ghost stories and stories about hauntings and like haunted houses. And
what's the Catherine Zeta-Jones one with Liam Neeson? Is that just The Haunting? Is that what that's called?
Might be, because all of those movies are based off a public domain story, basically. So there's The Haunting,
which I think The Haunting.
There's The Haunting on Hill House. There's a house on House on Haunted Hill. There's like a series of films. They all came out around the same time too. There's another.
I just love The Haunting because in the trailer, Catherine Zeta-Jones like twirls around and gestures at the whole house and goes, "Don't you just love it here?" And I've always had a special place in my heart for that line read. Anyway, now it is I who have interrupted LaTanya.
That's such a specific reason to like a horror movie.
I know. I've never let it go. It's just like always been embedded in my. Don't you just love it here? Is Kevin's glasses falling off his face? Sorry, very sorry, everyone.
No, Catherine Zeta-Jones, I hate it here.
I'll show myself out.
It's okay. You're good. So I being me, can't escape it. I broke up my recommendations into sections. And so I've got recent, unconventional, and traditional or classic. So for recent stuff, there's a movie called The Room that is streaming on, I think it's on Amazon Prime. That's just about a couple that moves into a house, that has a special room. That's all I'll say. And it's a very weird movie. And the ending might trip up some people, but it's kind of surprising a little bit, visually and with some of the storytelling stuff. And it also has an element of the kind of acting that was done in, what is the name of that? The movie, is it just Room or is it The Room? Tommy Wiseau movie.
Tommy Wiseau is The Room.
Okay, so this is also The Room.
Is with Brie Larson.
Right. So this movie is also The Room, but not the Tommy Wiseau.
The Tommy Wiseau movie is a bit of a horror movie itself.
It's horrifying. But a little bit of like...
So is the Brie Larson movie, of course.
Yeah, those are both horrifying. But a little... Yeah. Anything with Room in it is essentially a horror movie. The next is The Rental, which was the directorial debut of Dave Franco. And has like,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. The, woman who starred in A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I'm trying to remember her name. But she's one of the stars of this movie along with like, Allison Brie and Dan Stevens. And then, and Lip from, Shameless, who has a name and I will remember it at some point. But essentially, it's about a group of like two couples that go to an Airbnb for like a fun weekend getaway, and then hijinks ensue. And then the third one is called Relic. I think it's either on Hulu or Amazon Prime. And it is a movie that really deals with kind of like it's a haunted house story that deals with generational trauma in a way and deals with memory and how those types of things can be passed down from one generation to the next. It was a powerful film for me when I watched it recently, just because of like, you know, some personal stuff going on with family and memory issues. So recommend those three. In terms of unconventional, I never thought it would be part of my job to Google whether or not a movie contains blackface before I add it to a list of recommendations, but it's 2020. So here we go. So the first unconventional one is The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, which is a 1966 Don Knotts movie that I watched when I was very, very young. I went there. I was so young when I watched it, but it was hilarious. And I was like, I want to see more of the ghosts, but it's 1966. And liking that movie kind of was the gateway to my aunt being like, okay, that can terrify her and it'll be fine. So we moved on from that to, this 1991 Wes Craven movie, The People Under the Stairs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you all have seen this.
Mm-hmm.
No,
this movie has everything.
Stefan, you're back.
Yeah. So yeah.
Horror Stefan.
Directed by Wes Craven. It's a 1991 movie. Brandon Quentin Adams, who was in Michael Jackson's Moonwalker video, is the star of this movie, along with a young Rayanne Graff, AJ Langer, who is now a literal princess. Ving Rhames is in this movie. The plot basically is Poindexter Williams, whose nickname is Fool, played by Brandon Quinn Adams, and Ving Rhames' character Leroy sneak into Fool's family's apartment that they've been evicted from by slumlords, who only go by the names Mommy and Daddy. And without giving too much away, they are keeping some people under the stairs.
I hope so with the title.
It's bonkers. It's a bonkers movie.
It actually
is just like interesting and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, I actually thought of that one when we were talking about films with black characters. That one did come to my mind as well, where I was just like, oh, we got to remember to reference People Under the Stairs at some point, but I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, so good. So there are a couple like people focused ones, like Funny Games, the 2017 American one, Malevolent, which is on Netflix. It's a Florence Pugh movie. And then just like funnier ones like Beetlejuice, Cabin in the Woods.
Beetlejuice qualifying as a haunted house movie never occurred to me.
It's absolutely what it is.
It's absolutely
100% a haunted house movie.
Literally about ghosts haunting a home.
Yeah.
The ghost with the most.
The things that they do to their faces, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget, they'll turn.
Yeah, and when he stretches open his mouth, that's just such a great part.
That really screwed me up as a kid.
That movie is not for kids. Kids should not have been watching it, but we all did.
We all did. You know, leave us in the basement with a Ouija board. We're fine.
Michael Keaton, tremendous. Absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, and Catherine O'Hara in this movie. Yes. Just like...
Yep.
Out of this world.
Amazing. Yeah. So good. Yeah.
For sure.
And then I literally have that Harry Belafonte song on my songs. So it pops up eventually.
Yeah.
All right. And then finally for classic stuff, I had The Haunting of Hill House on here. Murder House, American Horror Story. The first season I loved.
That was a crazy experience because it was airing. And you didn't know that the show was an anthology yet.
Right.
And so it was killing characters off with wild abandon in a way that they were killing characters who you wouldn't think they would kill until a final season. And I think like that was like there was this moment of watching that season on the weekly that was very special in terms of like being able to be surprised by something. I think that that's something that that season of American Horror Story has, like whether you want to say Coven's a better season or other future seasons, there was something about that experience of Murder House that I'll never forget as a viewer. It was one of my favorite viewing experiences of anything because it was just always a total shock week in and week
out. I mean, it brought back the anthology format, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's another reason I give Lovecraft Country, and like I'm so optimistic about it. You know, like these shows are playing with conventions of how we view television. You know, and changing up the game and the way that, you know, it initially happened with American Horror Story, the first season. A lot of people were like, I'm never watching it. I'm not, if these characters aren't coming back, I'm done. Right. But people still gave that show a chance because it was created by Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk. So like, we have to continue to give creators like Misha Green and the people that she's working with more opportunity to like, you know, fill us in on some of these things that we need to know about. Cause we've given so many other people these opportunities in the past. Then 100%. Just to wrap it up, the first Insidious, the James Wan 2010 with Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson, who was trending recently on Twitter for being in all the movies that have ever been made.
But is not famous. That was so funny.
So scared when I saw Patrick
I know.
Wilson
I was
trending.
Like, please don't.
It's like, don't take, no, not him.
No,
not
he's Raul. Good. He did QRT that, but I thought was hilarious because like that tweet was trending and he QRT'd and was like, damn, I've been found out. And I thought that was real funny.
It was great.
Oh, I was so scared. Yeah. I was so scared.
It's like, it's continue to be a nice person who's married to the woman from Succession. Please keep doing it. You're good. So yeah, I really liked the way that that movie ratcheted up the tension by the music it used, and like the color and contrast between light and dark spaces. Changes in perspective, shifting with like the music. I just thought that that was done really well. And then the final three that I have on here are The Others, the Nicole Kidman movie, This House Is Ours,
which is Haunting of Bly Manor, I think, is drawing from similar source material. No?
I think Bly Manor. I thought Bly Manor was Turning of the Screw, but I could be wrong.
Is that not what The Others is taken from?
I don't know.
It's possible. It seems like, one of us is going to Google this now.
Just excuse me for a quick moment while I'll take a look. I'm going to Google The Others. We're going to go to Wikipedia. And I'm going to be wrong about that. Ah, wait. Yeah, the suggestion is that it was inspired. By the turn of the screw.
Okay. You did it.
I would say that that was a reach. It's a reach.
It's fine.
Josh is wrong. Kevin's right at the end.
On this one, I'll give it to
Yeah. So The Others, the original Amityville Horror, because, you know, classics, and the Grudge, either the the original or the Sarah Michelle Gellar one, but not the sequels.
Yeah, definitely not the sequels. Especially not the recent
one. Never saw The Grudge. Never seen Amityville Horror.
Any of them.
It's Long Island, right? I grew up close by. I would like drive through Amityville. So it was always on my mind. I was like, well, I'm not going to see that because that's going to scare the life out of me. And I need my life. So I haven't done it. How's the Ryan Reynolds one? Any good or no?
I mean, I watched it. That's my review.
It was a thing that my eyes experienced.
I like Ryan Reynolds. Yeah. I've said that many times. I think he's great in it, but it's not. You can't remake a movie like that and expect people to be like, yeah, this is way better. Doesn't happen.
Yeah. Okay. There are sequels.
So many sequels.
There are.
The third one has time travel, if I'm not mistaken. Looping that back around.
Not to mention all of the actual documentaries that are out there about the people who came in to try to like exorcise the demons and clear the house. Love that genre. I don't know if that hyper organized list of movies conveyed that to you, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is something very primal about that idea of like leave, you know, as like a subcategory of horror. I think works really, really, really well. And worked really well for this episode. I think, again, to your point, LaTanya, earlier, like, if we can't critique the things we love, then we really have lost everything. So I think it's important that we can both, really stop and acknowledge the ways that this show is rocking and ways in which, like, you know, it deserves to, you know, let's stop down and think about some of the stuff that maybe isn't working quite as well. But next week, it does look like we're in for some Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
is that a thing? Do you call it that? What is the? It's like a pulp adventure.
Pulp exploration.
Kevin, you're a big pulp guy, so I hope that you'll bring that to bear next week.
I'm excited to talk about that. Let's see how they do.
And many stories of all of your characters that you've played across the years.
Yes. Talk all about my D&D pulp games. That's the entire episode.
Yes. So that'll be next week. Before that, if you listen to Everything is Super, even if you don't, I hope that you'll give us a listen this week. LaTanya is going to join Kevin and I. We're going to talk about Black Panther. We're going to talk about Chadwick Boseman. Get your feedback in for that. Super at postshowrecaps.com. We'd really love to read your feedback on the air. Super at postshowrecaps.com. For next week's Lovecraft Country, Lovecraft at postshowrecaps.com. That's the way to write in to us. Subscribe to the podcast if you have not done so already. You can subscribe, of course, to the main post show recap feed. That way you won't miss a thing that we're doing here. We're doing a lot of things. There's the Avatar, the Last Airbender rewatch that was launched relatively recently that Kevin is very jealous that he's not a part of.
Yes, I mean, it's okay. I wanted to give other people a chance.
You got a lot going on here, man. Like, you can't have them
all. I can't be
on
everything.
This is the thing that I'm learning about myself, too. We've got the Marvel stuff. We've got Lost is back on track this week, and we've got Lovecraft as well. And as September and October here are popping up, we will have even more coming your way. So lots going on. Follow everybody on the Twitters. LaTanya, where do people find you?
At LK Starks on Twitter.
We had one person who wrote in who said, I love LaTanya so much that I followed all of the LaTanya Starkses on Twitter in search of the right one. I thought that was great.
That was so nice. That was really nice and appreciated. Thank you for that.
Kevin is at Kev Mahadeo.
That's right. You can follow me there. See all my raging out about everything.
Getting mad. Yeah. I'm at Round Howard. I'm trying to tweet cat pics to interrupt your doom scrolling.
I appreciate that.
It's the service that I am trying to provide where possible. We'll be back next week with more Lovecraft. We'll be back sooner than that with a conversation about Black Panther over at Everything is Super. Until then, everybody, take care of yourselves. We'll be back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.